Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 570 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am your host, Kevin Huntsberger, joined once again this week by Chad Smart. Chad, how are things going? I know that you have not had a chance to complete the, what was it, Wrestle Dream,
yes.
Pay-per-view with AEW, but you have seen part of it. So we're not going to talk AEW too much this week until we get into the blind ranking section. So there's spoiler alert. And something else with AEW, but anything on your mind before we dig deep into this week's episode?
Just, you know, we were talking before the show went on. I'm going to throw this out there to the listeners. I need a job. So if anybody is hiring, I know you keep offering me the position of your assistant.
Yes, yes.
But I think I would put the ass in assistant. So that's probably not a good thing. And I think if we had to work together again, we would kill each other. So
probably. Yeah. Well, I did promise a little AEW talk, and I'm going to do that in the form. If you're watching, you see this. If you're not, just listen to what I'm about to say. I purchased this back in February when we did the Royal Rumble contest for the My 1-2-3 Cents Wrestling Figure Drive, which December is just around the corner. It's crazy how fast 2025 has flown by. But I have the Jurassic Express. And now that they're back as a tag team, I have the Jurassic Express action figures. It comes in a two-pack. It's a really cool box and a display. And Chad and I were talking beforehand, thought about just putting this in with all the other figures that are going in the drive. But this is really kind of a collector's piece, I think. And I think that there are some listeners and viewers here that would be really into this. So we're going to do another raffle. I'll have all the details on the Facebook page. But the bottom line, if you've done one of the raffles here before, it's Venmo, it's Cash App, it's PayPal, $10 to get in. And that gets you an entry. Every $10 you spend, it gets you an entry in. And we'll use all of the 100% of the proceeds from that to buy more figures and wrestling toys for the drive, which is happening again. Usually the first week of December, we cut it off and then go buy the toys and then donate that second week. And then they distribute it to the Toys for Tots here in Southern Illinois, five different counties in Southern Illinois, the kids there benefit from that. And it's funny, last year when I dropped the toys off and I just put the figures in a big black trash bag and walk over there, ring the doorbell, and they come, and last year when they opened the door, she goes, "Oh, the wrestling guy." So they've come to know us at Toys for Tots. I think this is year 8 of doing this. And again, it's a ripoff of the Major Wrestling Figure Podcast, but on a much smaller scale. But again, it feels good to help and make a difference. And we have a tote full of figures already, but we obviously want to add more to that. And I have more from our Christmas in July event that we did to spend as well. So if you're able to support, thank you. We appreciate it. If not, just share the post and let folks know that we're doing this. But Chad, are you excited that Luchasaurus, I'm assuming Killswitch has switched his name back to Luchasaurus to fit the Jurassic vibe, right?
Yes, he took off his belt when they reunited and threw Killswitch into the audience. But I just had a thought, because you do listen, you are a major mark.
Yes, yes.
And I know Matt Cardona has spent well over $1 million on his action figure collection. Do you think he plays with his action figures? Do you think he still gets them out and has little matches with them and gets a Matt Cardona or Zack Ryder figure and has
probably
beat all the legends?
I mean, if there was a Kevin Huntsberger wrestling figure, I would do that. I would still get them out and, you know, beat up on guys. I've got some laying right here on the table now. I've got the John Cena stretchy thing that I bought a while back that kind of falls apart. It's not the most quality toy, but I have some bootleg knockoff thumb wrestlers. Is it Scott Hall? Is it Randy Savage? Is it Hulk Hogan? Who knows? So, and again, if you're listening and not watching, I apologize. And then for some reason, I still have IRS sitting out. So I need to reorganize and put, I say that every week. And one of these weeks, you're going to tune in and see that there's some change here, but I'll do it.
Yeah. I can't believe you haven't hit up Major Pod or the, Grapplers and Headlocks or Villains and Heroes, whatever the, all the different toy thing, and try to get a Baby Oil Express
two-pack made. There you go. Maybe I'll pitch that. Maybe I'll pitch that to them and see. But yeah, we've been doing in the month of October, it is October if you're listening in real time, Halloween themed blind rankings. And so, this is all just for fun and having a good time with it. So our main topic this week is going to be tag teams and specifically the Dudley Boys, but we just talked about Jurassic Express, and I'm going to pick Chad's brain about some things, some news and notes going on with the wrestlers calling an end to their careers in the foreseeable future and some new rumors that are floating out there. But before we get to that, I wanted to do a blind ranking, and this is on Scream Queens. So these are women wrestlers who you think would make the best Scream Queen, the sole survivor, if you will, of a horror film. Because we grew up in the 80s, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, Friday the 13th, all 27 of them. I think, if I remember correctly, with the exception of the ones that Corey Feldman was in, I feel like most of those movies ended with a female heroine being the final, I guess not victim, but the one that kind of slays the beast. So correct me if I'm wrong on that assessment, but.
I think you're right. But I mean, if we're going to talk 80s Scream Queens, we have to give a shout out to Linnea Quigley, the epitome of the 80s Scream Queen from Sorority Girls and the Slime Bowl-a-Rama and Return of the Living Dead 2.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. I'm not familiar. I haven't seen those. I'm not a big horror movie fan. I never even saw the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I obviously know of them and the stories and the concept behind it. I did see Halloween, Texas Chainsaw Massacre creeped me the hell out, Sleepaway Camp, and then the Friday the 13th genre. You know, I don't remember where I cut it off, maybe when Jason went to New York. Might have been one of the last ones of those that I saw.
Did you see Jason Goes to the Mall?
No. I think you have that on Out of Touchstone, though, right?
That was my subtle little plug. Yeah.
I chuckled when I saw that. Yeah, I do. Yeah. Reminder, check out of Touchstone on YouTube. Follow Chad on X or Blue Sky to keep up to date with that. That was funny, though. I did see that the other day when I watched, so.
Good. Yeah, I haven't seen Sleepaway Camp. I know the twist ending. I know the thing, and all the horror conventions out here always have Sleepaway Camp reunions, each one. But it's just, I think because I know the ending, I just haven't felt the need to watch it. But do you
like horror films though?
I liked horror films as a kid. I was a huge. I mean, we were talking earlier. I'm going to go see Alice Cooper tonight. What got me into Alice Cooper was his song "He's Back, the Man Behind the Mask," which was the unofficial theme for Friday the 13th Part 6. And I didn't know anything about Alice until then, but I was a huge Friday the 13th fan. You know, I saw Nightmare on Elm Street when I was 10 years old, so good parenting job by my parents. I think as I've gotten older, I don't like the jump scare as much. My heart is weak, so I can't take that anymore. But and I also don't like torture porn. But I do think like the Saw movies are probably some of the best storytelling. If they would just trim down the over the top gore, I think the story, like if someone wants to do a phantom cut, like Topher Grace did of the Star Wars prequels to edit out Jar Jar. If someone did that with Saw to take out all the excessive gore, I think you would have a really good PG-13 horror film series.
You know, I was kind of the same way. My brother was more into it and got the magazine, that Fangoria magazine back. Mm-hmm. And so I watched a lot of them on VHS. As an adult, I did watch and liked the first probably two or three Scream movies. Mm-hmm. I think they're up to seven now, which so I've obviously followed the franchise. But as I get older too, I'm not. And especially the ones, even more, the more realistic ones, I think are more, because it's like, this could be my kid, this could be my friend, this could be my wife, whatever the case may be, when they're more of those realistic dramas or thrillers or whatever, however you categorize them. But again, a lot of times it's the one of the women in the group that makes it to the end and has the dramatic scene of fighting Jason Voorhees or Freddy Krueger or, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis for decades, you know, as being part of that Halloween franchise. So I want Chad to blind rank, and you can do this however you want. If you want to do it on their in-ring wrestling ability or what you think they would be like in a real life fight, but they're all pretty, it's going to be tough. I think this is going to be probably the toughest one. So we'll just start right out of the gates with WWE Hall of Famer, Trish Stratus.
I mean, you know, she's the attractive female, so I think she would last pretty much close to the end, at least. I'm going to blind rank her. I'm going to go with a two.
Two, all right.
I think, yeah.
All right.
Might get some stratisfaction in the horror genre.
There you go. Up next, someone who I think could also be a badass and be one of the monsters in a movie, and that is Jade Cargill, former AEW talent and current WWE superstar.
I'm gonna go, I mean, yes, she's got the imposing figure, but I'm gonna go four for Jade.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Newly inducted TNA Hall of Famer, Mickie James.
I think, yeah, I'm not going to be that cruel with my comment. I'll tell you off air.
Okay.
I'm going to go five. I think Mickey is like that prototype early victim figure.
Okay. Up next, recently injured WWE superstar, former ladies champion multiple times, Rhea Ripley.
I go number one. She's going to survive. She's going to.
I think she could also be one of those contenders as the monster. So,
yeah.
All right. Last but not least, she has a flair for the dramatics. That's not leading to Charlotte Flair, by the way.
Oh.
But she is a multi-time AEW women's champion, and that is Toni Storm.
I mean, she's got the actress background, so she would fit in with the Scream movie, but I think three would fit her character pretty well.
Yeah, this is a pretty good list. I probably, you know, knowing the list that I was making, I would have had Jade probably at two and Trish at four. But Trish is a badass as well. So
yeah. I think unfortunately, I couldn't understand why they weren't on your list. But I think we got to throw a little acknowledgement to Luna Vachon, who would have been a good one, and Daphne, the Scream Queen of WCW, who again, mental health, serious issue, unfortunately, but I think Daphne would have made a great Scream Queen. And in that regard, recently, well, not so much recently, but former WWE wrestler Shotzi Blackheart, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Good one to throw in there as well.
Those are all good ones. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, because I believe she is the Queen of the Indies and has beaten up your boy Matt Cardona.
Yeah, he does not take kindly to that at all.
Yeah. Did you see the video of him running her over with her tank?
Oh, I don't guess I did.
And it broke her arm. Or,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Like in his driveway. I don't know. You can look it up. It's again, I give them credit for what they're doing for self-promotion on the indies, but also seems a little goofy at times. But hey, that's professional wrestling, right?
It is. So. It really is. And that kind of tails into what we're going to talk about as our main topic. And that is, you know, we talked the last couple of weeks, we've mentioned John Cena, the final matches that are coming up. And obviously, we still have about a month and a half before that last match on Saturday Night's Main Event, which we'll revisit or visit that topic soon as well. But last weekend, kind of, I guess there was some fanfare behind it, but I feel like, you know, TNA, despite being paired up with or in partnership with WWE, I still feel like it kind of flew under the radar. And that's the match between the Dudley Boys and the Hardys.
Team 3D.
Or, I'm sorry, you're right. Team 3D and the Hardys. The end of an era, as they're saying, and the Dudleys as a tag team apparently officially over. I don't think Bully Ray or Bubba has officially announced any kind of retirement, but D-Von, I think, has talked about it. And I don't think he's been very active over the last few years. So, first of all, let me get your thoughts on both of these teams. And obviously, Edge and Christian were that other team in that trio that had some memorable Hell in a Cell, or not Hell in a Cell, TLC matches and whatnot. Were you a fan of that era of tag team wrestling? I think that, you know, ebbs and flows of wrestling. And this was definitely where we saw tag team wrestling get a little more love and attention in WWE. And from the 80s, you know, obviously we had a plethora of teams, and then it kind of faded off. And this was the launch of the Attitude Era and part of the Attitude Era, and even on the tail end of the Attitude Era, those three teams, specifically Edge, Christian, the Dudleys, and the Hardys, put it back on the map, I think, for in, at least in the minds of a lot of fans.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it was an interesting time in wrestling, especially those three teams had each had something different to offer, which brought them on. You know, Edge and Christian, I think, were the personalities of the tag team division. Hardy Boys, Team Extreme, obviously doing the extreme moves, and the Dudley Boys being the, you know, just the ass kickers. I was going to say ass kissers, but that's then that's Bubba Ray today. The ass kickers, you know, and I was a huge ECW fan. So when the Dudleys jumped ship over to WWE, I was very intrigued into how they would do. And obviously they were not going to be the ECW version of the Dudley Boys who would, you know, try to start a riot and talk about women's skills in the audience, but they adapted to WWE style. I think those three teams, like I said, I think because each one brought something different to the table, no pun intended, that it helped make the teams and it helped vitalize that tag team scene in the Attitude Era.
Yeah. And, you know, I had seen the Dudleys, and I know there were several members. It was almost like a faction, right? Back in the ECW days.
Yeah, you had Big Dick, Sign Guy, Dances with Dudleys. I think there's Spike. Another one in Spike, yeah.
So why do you think they didn't all make the transition over? Was it too much of a indie-ish act to translate into the WWE? Or
I
don't feel like they changed terribly, did they? I mean, they cleaned up their language, but they were still at the heart kind of the same team, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in a sense, yeah, because I think Bubba did do his stuttering gimmick when they first showed up. I would say, not to speak badly of people who are way more talented than I am, I don't think the other ones had the talent to make it to the WWE level. Because I mean, other than Bubba Ray, D-Von, Spike, I mean, Big Dick Dudley got a little bit of a, you know, push in ECW, but I don't remember the rest of them. And they may have been bigger before I started watching ECW, but I think once D-Von came in and joined the group, it pretty much just became Bubba Ray and D-Von.
We have talked about longevity of wrestlers, or, you know, Undertaker, Goldust, Kane, those characters started in, you know, the, you know, Undertaker was 1990 and really carried through until 2020. Mm-hmm. And then we saw, you know, other guys coming in and having that staying power. And obviously in today's world, I feel like we're getting more of that, but in an era where, you know, high risk and high reward with the Hardys and the Dudleys mm-hmm. And Christian, but the Hardys, especially their staying power and their popularity. I hear other podcasters talk about going to mm-hmm. conventions and stuff, and like the Hardys still have the longest line and the fan base. And they really, other than the tweak of the, what was it? The broken Matt Hardy and Brother mm-hmm. Nero and all that. They pretty much stayed tried and true to those original roots, almost like the Rock and Roll Express in a way, but mm-hmm. they've just transcended. And what is it about them? And of the three, what's your favorite of the three teams?
Yeah, I am surprised at the Hardy Boy fandom in today's yeah. fans, because, and I think, you know, part of it might be fans that got into wrestling as kids, you know, when the Hardys got popular, because they were wrestling in WWE as jobbers for
right.
a few years before making that jump. You know, you and I were both in college already. So mm-hmm. I think the way we perceive them is different than a lot of other fans may perceive them, because I mean, I think the Rock and Roll Express is a good example of, you know, that's the team that was popular when we were kids, we were right. watching. So for us to look at the Rock and Roll Express today, we're like, yeah, it makes sense for Ricky Morton to still have a mullet because that's what they are. So I guess that's why they're still so popular, is that it's just that maybe that first team that fans got into and they've stuck with them. Yeah. And like you said, they haven't really reinvented the wheel other than the broken stuff, which was popular, but they're, you know, I think we've said it many times on the show before, there is something about nostalgia and mm-hmm. just wanting, being, you know, comfortable with the familiar. For me personally, I would have to probably say Edge and Christian were my favorite, or are my favorite. I would say probably back in the Attitude Era, I was probably leaning more towards the Dudleys just because of the ECW connection and Edge. But as time has gone on, I think Edge and Christian are the better technical, you know, they have the better work rate, which is very important to be a popular wrestler.
Yes. You know, I agree. I thought they were more entertaining too. You know,
yeah, obviously, they were the
smart, they were the class clowns.
They were the class clowns, and the Hardys just, again, taking dives off 20-foot ladders and doing crazy things. But and maybe that's my vision or version of the Hardys today, is that I'm like, for me, I'm over it. You know, it's, I don't buy into it the way that I did 25 years ago.
Well, and we've seen all three of those teams split up. Some, you know, obviously the Hardys feuded for a little bit. We saw Matt and Jeff wrestle at WrestleMania 25. Mm-hmm. Edge and Christian feuded and then got back together. And then even over in AEW, as Cope and Christian Cage, they've feuded and are now back together.
Devon, had No Mercy 2001 in St. Louis? Just
no. Okay. No. What happened there?
That's, I believe, Edge and Christian fought. Because that was during the invasion. And Christian had jumped to the WCW side.
No, I was not there for that. We were living in Indiana at that point. But I don't remember. I remember the Dudley splitting because of the brand shift, or the brand split. And Devon did the Father Devon.
Reverend Devon with the freaking Deacon.
Yeah, with Batista as his guy, and then Bubba Ray was the singles guy. To me, it didn't work. I didn't like it at all. And I remember watching Survivor Series that year. I think it was 2002 at Buffalo Wild Wings when we were living in Indiana. And it was Spike, Bubba Ray, and Jeff Hardy, I think, wrestling in a six-man against maybe the Rico's team, the Samoans.
Really? Three minute warning.
Yeah. I think that was them. And they were getting beat up pretty bad. The good guys were, and Devon made the save. And I remember being so happy that they were finally putting them back together, because it just didn't work. And I think with some tag teams, even though you want to see them, you know, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, perfect examples of great tag team wrestlers who went on to become great single stars. But like the Road Warriors, the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express, you want to see those teams as teams. And I think the Dudleys and the Hardys definitely fall into that category. And I know that Jeff specifically has had a lot of single success, but I prefer all of those. You know, Edge and Christian, I do like Edge as a singles and Christian for that matter, but there's just something, you know, I think sometimes fans or wrestlers themselves feel like they're in a tag team and it's kind of a rut, or it's not as successful. But I'm a big tag team wrestling fan, so I enjoy when they get a little love and attention for what they do.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Bubba did find success later on as Bully Ray.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he slightly evolved the character. But, like, to take Devon and make him Reverend Devon, like, that just didn't make sense. Like, and I get it, you know, it's playing off the Testify and everything. Yeah. But I also think, you know, like the Rock and Roll Express and Road Warriors, the Dudleys were more, and I don't know if I can explain this the way I'm thinking it. They seem to be more of a tag team that was attached to each other. Like Matt and Jeff and Edge and Christian, you could see them kind of having their own personality or their own, I guess, moveset. But with the Dudleys, it seemed like everything was connected together. You know, Devon get the tables, the Dudley Death Drop was, you know, a tag team move that they both had to do at the same time to do it. Whereas Edge and Christian and the Hardys, I don't remember them having a specifically, you know, tandem finishing move.
Yeah.
So
that's a good way to look at it. It's kind of, you know, like you said, the Road Warriors, you know, the Doomsday Device, the Heart Foundation, the Heart Attack. And I agree. I think it's better when a tag team can, I think we talked about this on our Finishing Moves podcast a couple of weeks ago, you know, having, or might've been last week, that connective tissue with a tag team partner to be able to execute and do something with. You know, we're reaching that point in our fandom where obviously most of the guys from when we were watching in the early days of the 80s have either passed or have retired. Now we're seeing that Attitude Era generation, you know, there's a list, you know, from Dustin Rhodes or Dustin Runnels to, I guess, Dustin Rhodes still, Chris Jericho, Edge, Christian, the Dudleys, the Hardys, that are reaching that point where, you know, 10 years ago, they would have been retired for a long time, because a lot of these guys are in their 50s now, some of them pushing 60. So we're seeing more longevity, and you wouldn't have seen this, I don't think, in the 80s and 90s of, you know, we've talked ad nauseum about that. But I think we're going to be seeing a lot more big names calling it a career. John Cena, for example, we've talked a lot about that. And he's getting the star treatment, the royal treatment. I read a rumor the other day that Chris Jericho is going to come back to WWE and finish out there and do a retirement tour. Where are you on retirement tours, and how do we determine who gets that treatment versus who doesn't? Because there's a lot of great talent out there right now.
Yeah.
It's hard to say, oh, well, Goldberg gets one last match on Saturday night's main event. And maybe if Goldberg had been active this whole time, it would have been a different thing. But I do think he kind of came and went and kind of, I was okay with his closure and his finish. I know he wasn't, but, and
shocking.
You know,
and I think that, you know, I think that's part of it too, as for, I think it's an attitude thing and not just an attitude era thing, but I think Goldberg wanted things on his terms.
Yeah.
And and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but you know, if they had tried to do a 6-month retirement tour, you know, I'm sure it would have cost, it probably would have caused more headaches, because it's like, oh, we want you to face this guy. Oh, well, I don't want to lose to this guy, or I don't want to face it, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas Cena seems to be pretty open to, I mean, obviously open to anything, given that ill-fated heel turn.
Yeah.
And which again, hindsight 50-50, which is even better than 2020 hindsight. but I don't know. And I think Cena has been the face of WWE for 20 years, basically, almost. Yeah. So I think someone like, you know, I think it would have been the same if like Hogan had wanted a retirement tour. You give, they have that stature to say, okay, this is good, because I mean, yes, fans would pay to see Goldberg, but how many fans are paying to see Goldberg as opposed to seeing John Cena?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so if you promote it as, hey, this is the last time you're seeing John Cena, and you can promote it, do it. Whereas, you know, AJ Styles has said that next year is going to be his last year. Mm-hmm. And nothing against AJ, but I don't think AJ needs necessarily a retirement tour. You might build up to like that last match,
yeah,
and just say this is going to be it, but I don't think you need to play into the retirement the entire time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I know they did a big thing. I guess they went from Australia to Japan.
Yeah.
And I guess they did a big celebratory thing after his last match in Japan, or I guess I guess they're not planning on returning to Japan in 26, or at least before AJ. I don't think they've given a date on AJ's.
I think has said maybe his contract is up either right before or right after WrestleMania. I think I read that months ago, but
yeah,
you know, I don't know. Again, no one sends me their contracts to review, which I asked Andrade, but he wouldn't give it to me. And now look.
So I'm glad you brought him up. So let's talk about that, because that's the other rumor I've seen, is that this was all orchestrated. They to bring Edge to WWE for Cena's last match.
I hope so. I hope, because that is the greatest ploy in wrestling history. If that was the case, it's like, hey, let's release Andrade and tell him he doesn't have a no compete, because we know AEW is going to put him on TV, and then we can sue AEW. Like, I mean, stranger things have happened in the world of wrestling, so I wouldn't be surprised if it happened, but it just seems like that's a lot of, it's like...
conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good show that I've watched recently where it's like, everything has to happen, you know, for the main plot to proceed. So... I don't think whatever has gone on, I don't think would be enforceable in a court of law. Mm-hmm. At least I would hope not, because it sets a dangerous precedence. But I don't know what's going on. It's just a very weird situation.
Well, and, you know, the other thing about last matches or retirement matches is seemingly, like I said, Devon is done, so it is the last Dudley Boys match, and I get this, or the team 3D match, and I get the send off, or the, you know, and it wasn't on the same scale obviously as Goldberg or John Cena's is shaping up, Ric Flair's, etc., and I get all of that. I also think it seems at least, because this generation of superstars who are wrestlers who are retiring and calling it quits, you know, they're saying, this is it, I'm not coming back. And with the exception, you know, Shawn Michaels held pretty true to that. He did the one match in Saudi or in the Middle East a few years ago with Undertaker. But I think for the most part, guys, as they're retiring and hanging up, I believe John Cena is done. I believe AJ Styles, when he's done in 26, will be done. But, you know, how many times did we hear Terry Funk is going to retire?
You know, I'm pretty sure Terry Funk had retired before I even knew who Terry Funk was.
Yeah. It's interesting that, you know, again, the way the business is, and we hear retirement and then we instantly expect them to be back in the ring. And especially now, I think with the Saudi money, if you will, and how they have tried to entice and get guys to return to the ring. And I really don't know if I have a point to any of this, but it feels like retirement today in wrestling seems a little more legit, I guess. And not like it was back in the day where, you know, and again, we talked about our disappointment with Flair and retiring or having the big send off and then coming back almost a year later and doing the DK run and stuff. So I again, don't begrudge them, but also I think when they go through all of this motions and putting on these spectacles, I think it does kind of hurt the reputation of a retirement. And I know we're talking about wrestling, so at the end of the day, who cares? But
well, it hurt. I would say, you know, do you think today's wrestlers stick more to the retirement because financially they are better off than the previous generation? Like one, they've made more money. Two, they've probably been wiser with it than the previous generation. So they don't need to come back for a payday.
That's an excellent point. I didn't think about that. No. I think that there's also more opportunities now for kind of those ambassador roles or to come back and still be part of the show or part of the event.
Yeah. And I would say with the conventions as well, there seems to be more wrestling conventions to where you can go and make, you know, you like, I mean, I'm sure the Hardys are making more than what they make wrestling on an independent show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Just by signing autographs and taking photos.
Yeah.
But
much easier on the body, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think it's a combination of all that. And I think, well, and like you said, wrestlers are also wrestling longer into their career. So, you know, if you were a wrestler that retired at 35 and then you come out at, you know, 42 and think, oh, well, I still got a couple matches left in me, as opposed to, you know, Dustin Rhodes is near 60 when he retires. Is he going to come back and pull a Luthez and wrestle at 80 years old?
Well, what do you think about that? Because, you know, we've talked about the guys who are making it clear, okay, 2026 is my last match. Samoa Joe is allegedly talking of winding things down. I don't think I've ever heard anything official from Jericho. It's all the internet rumors. So we'll leave that one alone. But, you know, we hear these guys kind of talk about it and winding it up and fading off into the sunset. But then years later, you know, break in case of emergency, they break the glass and, you know, Ric Flair, we thought Ric Flair was done after back in what, 2010, 2011, whatever year that was. And then he came back in 22 and had a match. So you mentioned Dustin specifically, but like these guys that are, Jeff Jarrett's another one that is, you know, has more matches behind him than he does in front of him. So do you think when they do retire, does it cheapen or lessen the return? You know, Mick Foley had talked about, you know, because I think there's a difference between retiring and having a last match, if that makes sense. Like saying, you know, Ric Flair's last match, and then there were rumors after that he wanted to do another one just to kind of do better than he did in the last match. And to me, that would be not a good thing. But Mick Foley kind of forced into retirement. Hulk Hogan was, and that's probably a bad example because he's no longer here, but, you know, Foley,
he had to retire.
There was a rumor going around that when he turned 60, which was earlier this year, that he was going to have one more match, you know, his last match. And they were building up to that. And then I think he had some health issues that showed that, no, this is not a good to do this. Yeah. So does that diminish when a guy does retire, you know? And I keep thinking of other examples, Ricky Steamboat, you know, he unofficially retired in the mid 90s because of a back injury. And then, you know, again, at that WrestleMania 25, we saw him get back in the ring and he had a handful of matches after that even. I didn't have a problem with that because he didn't ever really, you know, he retired. But he was forced into it because of an injury. Edge, you know, came back. So I don't have a problem when that happens. But I think when they bill it as the last match.
Yeah.
And I know there's an asterisk by Goldberg because I guess it's the last WWE match. But, you know, I'll admit, I would be disappointed if Cena comes back next year or in 2 years and wrestles again.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like rock bands who say they go out on their farewell tour. And then, I mean, I did it with Motley Crue in 2014, 2015. They're like, this is the last show. We're never going to play again. We've signed a contract that we can never play. Mm. And then 4 years later, they're like, yeah, we tore that contract up and now we're going back out. And it's like, but I saw you on your final show that you promoted as being the farewell, yeah. You know? Yeah. And I think there's a difference with wrestlers who I can't remember who said it. It may have been Foley or Jake, where it's like, you don't retire, you just take longer between matches.
Mm, yeah.
And I think that's the thing where it's like, if you don't come out and say, hey, I'm never going to wrestle again, and then you just end up not wrestling, that's one thing. Or you don't wrestle for, you know, 4 or 5 years, and then you're like, okay, I'm going to get back in the ring and I want to have a match that I want to have. I'm perfectly fine with that. But yes, in the case of like Flair or Cena, where it's like, this is it, you know, and apparently, I mean, the one we've talked about ticket prices over the last few months in WWE, ticket prices for Cena's farewell match are, again, insane. Apparently there were like 60,000 people in the queue though, waiting to buy tickets when they went on sale.
Wow.
You know, people said like, this should have been a stadium show. You could have sold out. To me, that is a kind of a false advertisement if you go back on it, mm-hmm. especially if there's any part of you as a wrestler that knows like, hey, you know, I may want to step back in the ring, or, with AJ Styles, it's like, hey, if I have a chance to have one more match with Samoa Joe after this, I may. And I'm trying to think who it was where, I don't know if it, oh, I think it, it's the thing I sent you, Vince Russo.
Oh, yeah.
There were talks with AEW to bring Cena in to face Edge, or like.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I don't buy that. But if it's a thing where if AJ Styles said, you know, hey, if I can get a match with an AEW with Samoa Joe, or go back to TNA and face Kazarian or somebody, you know, again, I would hope that you would be upfront with your fans, especially if you're charging thousands of dollars for the final match.
Yeah. I mean, it's that final WWE match versus final, you know, AEW match or whatever, you know, cause I don't think Sting's going to wrestle again. I think he's what, 66 years old. So, but it's good to see, you know, those guys pop up every once in a while and make their presence known, and
yeah, as long as he doesn't show up in the Wolfpack makeup.
yeah
I don't know who greenlit that one, but
yeah, that was anything else on your mind of retirements and last matches before we retire this week's episode?
I wish I could retire right now, but stupid bills. I think it's going to be interesting again to see how Cena's retirement match plays out, given all the rumors that are out there as to what's going to happen. We've talked about it. I still think that Saturday night's main event should just be a tribute to Cena, not a final match. But then maybe that Saturday night's main event should be a 2-hour match. Just have Cena go out there and run a gauntlet of all of his past opponents and, you know, go over everybody.
There you go. One last super,
One last Super Cena moment. We saw it this past week, with the passing of Ace Frehley. Mm-hmm. We are at that age where, again, not necessarily death, but just age itself is going to start removing the wrestlers that we grew up with, or even the wrestlers from our generation now. are going to be done. And it's, you know, it's part of life, and it's sad, and it's also disheartening because it just shows us that we're getting old. But yeah, that's where we are.
Very true. We'll be sitting here 1 year talking about Dominic Mysterio's retirement, perhaps. So,
well, I mean, he's already got 25 years in the business, so he doesn't.
That's true.
I mean, he could retire at any point.
That is very, very true. Well, friends, we want to hear from you. Let us know what is on your mind in terms of wrestling retirements. Who has left that you are disappointed in, and who do you think is going to retire in the coming years? Because there's a laundry list of guys who are nearing that retirement scenario. So let us know in the comments. Again, don't forget about the Jurassic Express raffle going on right now for the My123Cents Wrestling Figure Drive. And we will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.